Hello, this is Lauren Cardinal, and you're listening to Here's the Thing. Today's show, I will be talking about transition, and more specifically, women and transition. And for that, I have a special guest joining me. Linda Rossetti is here to speak with me. She's a social entrepreneur and author of Women and Transition, Reinventing Work and Life. I had the pleasure of meeting with Linda a few weeks ago at one of her speaking engagements, and she graciously agreed to speak with me today so we could bring this really amazing and important information to you. So welcome, Linda, and thank you for joining me.
Hi, Lauren. It's so nice to be here. Thank you for asking me to join you.
Absolutely. So, of course, I'd love to just dive right into the specifics of the book and about the about transition in general. But first, a social entrepreneur. I described you as a social entrepreneur, and I wonder if you could explain a little bit more about that, what it means to you and what it means to me and to us.
Sure, and it's a question I get all the time, Lauren, but, you know, we have this fascination with entrepreneurship in our world, right? You know, these people that can create something and bring something forward to the world, be it, you know, a cool app or, you know, a new book or what have you. Social entrepreneurship is really dedicated to all of those kind of innovation instincts, but directing them to a social mission, so something that has a good outcome for society. And so I've been an entrepreneur in my past, right? I was a technology company founder and had a wonderful kind of techie career, but now I'm targeting those skills at the topic of transition, because I really believe that in our society, we misunderstand transition. So social entrepreneurship in my world is really kind of creating a discussion, an entity, some kind of movement to get everyone to start thinking about transition in a different way. So social entrepreneurship is really just mission-based or social mission-based entrepreneurship.
Love it. Love it. And because of the mission is, as based on your book, is the idea of discussing transition in a more open way and adding vocabulary to it, the knowledge of it. And that's an assumption on my part. I'm sure that you have more information to add about that. And I wanted to find out, to ask about that, but also with your book, how sort of that question of how it came to be for your book.
Absolutely. You know, I came to transition unexpectedly, right? I feel very fortunate in my life. I've had so many great opportunities. As I mentioned, I was the CEO and founder of a technology-based company up in Boston that had venture capital backing, and, you know, it was a big deal. We ran it for many years, and then it was acquired. And one of the gentlemen who had served on my board of directors asked me to join him in another large corporate environment called Iron Mountain. It's a big Fortune 500 company based in Boston as well. And so I did that. I went and ran HR and administration for them all over the world. And I say that not to say, oh, wow, look at my big job. I say, ooh, that's something I had never done. And so it was a big lift to try to do that job. And I think it sapped all of my energy, the energy that I had to give. And while I was doing that job, I had two young children. And one day, I was on a business trip in London, and there was an issue with my daughter. She got left at school, if you can imagine. She's a kindergartner and got left at school. And so I was in London, and all of a sudden my husband calls me on my cell phone and says, she's fine. And, Lauren, in that moment, you know, transition kind of got deposited on my lap.
Sure.
It was something incredibly unexpected. By the way, she was fine, right? There was some minor drama, but in the end, it will go down kind of in the annals of parenting as a very minor crisis, which was fine. Everyone was fine. But in that moment, I wasn't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all of a sudden, I was kind of catapulted into this place where the ground fell out from underneath me. And I didn't have the vocabulary to say, ooh, this is a transition. I really didn't know what was happening. But sure. All the things that I had used to make decisions in the world suddenly shifted, and I just couldn't make sense of anything. And it started me on a path that for many years was difficult. And it it was so wrenching, it ultimately led me to my work, which started just over 5 years ago. You know, that moment when I was in London was so catastrophic. It kind of provoked me to go look for information to try to understand what was happening. And I realized that I couldn't find much that really spoke to what I was feeling. And so I started to talk with other people. And mm-hmm. That was fascinating because it led me to this conclusion that even though I was talking with people whose circumstances were vastly different than my own, right? You know, mm-hmm. there were single people, there were, you know, retired people, there were married people, there were people with children, people without children, like, you know, you name it, there were all sorts of permutations. We were all encountering the same thing, and yet none of us had vocabulary to really embrace it. And so, long-winded answer, Lauren, but really that I found transition unexpectedly because something happened in my life, and it kind of catapulted me to this new place that I didn't have the vocabulary or the knowledge or anything, quite frankly, with which to make a decision.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that really caused me to look. And that initial research that I referenced was really the beginning, and ultimately it inspired me to start some very formal research. And before I was done, I did 2 18-month flights of research with people from all walks of life who were experiencing transitions. And it's really from that work that I learned a lot about transition, really created the backbone of the book that you referenced already, but it also serves as the backbone to my broader work in transition.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned something that your transition was unexpected. From your research and talking with people, is it your experience or thought that most, if not all, of our transitions are unexpected? Or are there some that are expected?
Well, you know, it's a great question. And the reality, what I did learn about, let me say a minute about what transition
Absolutely.
Looks and feels like.
Yes,
and then I'll talk about whether it's expected or not, right? So one of the things I learned from the research is that we really butcher the vocabulary around transitions, right? Because, you know, I would say, you know, my event in London is a transition, when in fact it isn't. What I learned is that transitions are made up of three things: a trigger, a decision, and an action. And triggers are those things that are often the things that we talk about as transitions, but really they're the catalyst that serve as an opportunity for us to pursue transition. And so catalysts can be any one of a number of things. They can be intentional things like, oh, I'm going to go to college, I'm going to graduate, I'm going to retire, we're going to welcome another child. These are planned and intentional things. Those things can be triggered,
mm-hmm.
triggers. But unintentional things can also be triggers, like, oh my goodness, I went in today and I lost my job, or, you know, there's been a sudden change in the health of someone in my family or myself, or, God willing, you know, somebody's passed away, or, you know, all sorts of intentional, unintentional things
mm-hmm.
can serve as triggers for our transition. But what I learned in my research is that transitions really occur when there is a shift in what holds value and meaning to us. And thousands of things can trigger those shifts, right? But the triggers
mm-hmm.
themselves aren't the transitions.
Mm-hmm.
It's really our willingness to kind of re-examine our assumptions about, you know, what holds value and meaning to us. Those are the things that really stand at the core of transition. And it's really a decision, right? You know, people can experience hundreds of triggers, right? You know, someone can lose their job or their house. They can get divorced. They can move. All of those things are triggers, and yet a person can choose not to transition, right? It's really a choice, and it ultimately resides in this place where we need to reexamine our assumptions about, you know, who we are and how we make meaning in the world.
Mm-hmm. So from what you're describing, it sounds like the triggers, maybe not always, but certainly predominantly are external, where a transition, if the decision is made to have that or make that transition, transitions are always internal.
Well, it's interesting, and I can't thank you enough for asking me that. You know, what I've found in the research is that the triggers can be events, right, which are very often external, mm-hmm. right? You know, I'm getting married, I've gotten divorced, you know, I've graduated, retired, what have you. I have an empty nest, all sorts of things. But also a feeling can serve as a trigger. Like there are many people in my research referenced a recognition, you know, that something isn't right, or a feeling of boredom, right? So feelings can also serve as triggers to a transition. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, the work of transition requires us to do some really reflective work, so internal work, mm-hmm. But also, you know, some external work, which is kind of envisioning, you know, with our new set of beliefs, our refined beliefs, you know, what is it that's going to really bring out the best that we have to offer to this world? So there are, transition is about internal and external in terms of how we do it. It's a process. But triggers very often are events or feelings. And, you know, most of the vocabulary that we use in conversation with our friends or family members, very often we're talking about triggers, you know, as if they themselves are transitions. Mm-hmm. And most of those that, you know, kind of get scooped up, you know, over a cup of coffee, you know, on the edge of the soccer field or wherever, those often are the external ones.
And it's interesting that you mentioned that, like, over a cup of coffee, because sometimes the transitions are, because they're evolving, it seems like more of a something to mention in a passing conversation or just a quick conversation. But the magnitude of what it is really warrants like a whole pot of coffee rather than just the cup of coffee. Right? I mean, it just...
Absolutely. Yeah, a whole pot of coffee. I love that whole idea, a whole pot of coffee. It really definitely deserves it. You know, one thing that I did learn that was pretty interesting in my research was that, you know, we really misunderstand transition as a society. And part of that starts with our vocabulary, right? We interchange the words change and transition all of the time.
Absolutely.
And from a kind of a personal growth and development lens, they're very different things, right? Changes are used to, you know, achieve a goal, right? Changes are very often goal-oriented. You know, I need a new job. I need a new house. You know, I need a different relationship, you know, someone who's going to support me in a different way, right? Changes are very goal-oriented, whereas transitions occur when there's this shift in what holds value and meaning to us, and they require us to re-examine our assumptions about our identity, our capacity, and our values. And so both are process-oriented, but the outcomes are very different, right? The outcome of a change, very goal-oriented. Mm-hmm. The outcome of a transition is almost a connectedness to those things that hold value and meaning to us. That's a highly individual outcome, mm-hmm. and oftentimes something that's difficult to convey over a pot of coffee. Part of it is because we don't have the vocabulary, right? We struggle with the vocabulary. Mm-hmm. But even once we have the words, I think what you're referencing is that it is a process. It isn't, okay, I'm going to decide transition, and I flick the switch, and voila, I'm there.
Exactly,
right? It really isn't. It's a process that requires kind of several steps on our part. And that's, you know, not something that's often rushed.
And it can't be because of the process that it is. It's like the grieving process. The grieving process is the process, and it takes as long as it takes, and we can put some time frames around it. But the transition process is a process as well.
Exactly, and I'm so happy you mentioned the grieving process because, you know, some of the things I've read on it related to my work on transition really helped me think about transition differently, right? You know, there's some wonderful work. Maybe you've seen the book. It's called Bearing the Unbearable, right? It's this reflection on grief. And really what the book is saying that grief isn't something to be overcome. Grief is something that is a feeling that we're always going to have, but how we respond to it mm-hmm. changes over time. Mm-hmm. And transition is somewhat similar in that, because what I found is that once you educate someone in terms of what really is happening during a transition process, all of a sudden people can respond differently to it, right? They're not kind of ruled by the process. They're able to navigate the process in a way that is enlivening and very enriching to themselves. Instead of, you know, very often some people come to transition like, oh, oh no, what have I done? What's going to be next? A lot of fear. Oh, what's next?
Sure.
What's next? And the thing that I will say after studying this is that we can never take away the uncertainty, right, where the outcome is going to be, because some of these things are big questions that we handle in transition. But what knowledge of transition does is it changes how we respond to that uncertainty
mm-hmm.
in a very productive way.
Mm-hmm.
Which then opens up so many more avenues for us, you know, to explore.
Sure, sure. And, you know, it's interesting when you talk about adding the vocabulary. For me, and for what I do and how I approach hypnotherapy and coaching with clients, there's so much about normalizing the process, normalizing whatever anyone is experiencing. And I think because we haven't had the vocabulary around it, it seems like a concept or an experience that's so individualized. And to a certain extent it is because of the circumstances surrounding it. But transition itself really is a normal process. And to put the words around it and give someone that freedom kind of is like a... It's a sigh of, okay, I get it now, and let's move through this process.
Exactly. Thank you for framing it in that way. It's so true. It's kind of legitimizing in a way
mm-hmm.
that there's no baggage of like, oh my goodness, what have I done? How have I gotten myself here? All that gets checked to the side to say, oh, really what this is about growth. And, you know, I found some great research that your listeners might be interested in. It was done at the Harvard Graduate School of Education by two researchers, one gentleman, Robert Keegan, and the other, a woman, Lisa Laskow Leahy. And they looked at stages of adult development. And what they found is that over time, even though, you know, when we see young children, right, we're all very interested in whether or not they're making their developmental milestones. And, you know, if, God forbid, we don't see certain milestones achieved,
mm-hmm.
we say, oh, we need early intervention, right? Let's help this young person. Whereas an adult, none of that conversation happens, or very rarely does it happen. And
you're right.
Frankly, adults have this opportunity to go through certain milestones as well. And what I found is that educating people on them is really kind of productive. Do you mind if I just
please
say a couple
do.
Of words about
Absolutely.
It,
Absolutely, please do.
So the first stage of adult development that we all kind of enter as we you know, enter adulthood is this stage called the social stage. And at that stage, our definition and expectation of ourself is derived from our social environment. So, you know, the communities we live in, our families, our religious affiliations, the places we go to school, the type of work we choose to do, right? All of those things kind of exist in a personal ecosystem that really helps us set our own definition and expectation of self.
Mm-hmm.
And when we enter adulthood, we all, frankly, start there,
mm-hmm.
you know, with few exceptions. And as we kind of proceed through growth stages in adulthood, the next place that we can go is this place called the self-authoring place. And in self-authoring, we become our own seat of judgment. And so we create this set of beliefs, and those beliefs become the source of our expectations and definition of ourself, right? So we go from social, when our expectations and definition of self are kind of derived from this social environment,
mm-hmm.
to this second place, where those same definitions and expectation of ourselves are really derived from our own self-authored belief system, right? And that's the second place of adult growth.
Mm-hmm.
And the final stage of adult growth is this kind of transformative stage where our definition and expectation of self are derived not only from our own belief structure, but our recognition that everyone has a belief structure and that no one structure is kind of the winning structure, but that we can benefit from the knowledge and experience of all in order to define our own expectations of ourselves. And so that's kind of like a transcendental phase. That's how I think of it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found from the research, Lauren, is that almost 60%, it's 59 and change, never get to the second phase, right? 59% of adults in the study that was done at the Ed School never got to the second stage.
To the second stage.
And so
Wow.
Right, so I look at that and say, wow, you know, I wonder if we educated people on transition, they'd understand more about what it was to grow, you know, beyond maybe some of our initial assumptions that are derived from our social environment and get into this self-authored phase. And really in transition, what's happening is our identity that may have been rooted in our own personal ecosystem is actually being refined. And we may dial it to, you know, say, look, 20% of that doesn't make sense anymore. I want to self-author that component. And in transition, while we think of that as a big change, the reality is that's growth, right? It is adult growth.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, most times when I talk to people about transitions, you know, I say, how many walked in the room with the word growth on their mind? Right. And I can tell you it's zero. Right. Because we transition, maybe because of some of the vocabulary confusion that we have, for whatever reason, is this very often kind of heavy, you know, hard thing. And the reality is there are some steps required in transitioning, but the core of it is a beautiful growth process. You know, that's really all about the potential for each person.
Fascinating. And that self-transforming mind, I have to say, when you were talking about the self-transforming mind and understanding that everyone has their own set of beliefs and that we can learn and grow from that, my mind immediately went to, boy, how beneficial that would be in the political realm. But I'm curious to know, you mentioned less than 60% get to the second step, the self-authoring mind. What about the self-transforming mind? What are the percentages there? And would you imagine, I would imagine that if that second stage sort of grouping grew, that there would be more opportunity for that self-transforming mind as well.
Oh, absolutely. And today, in that data that I was referencing, only 7% make it to the top of the curve.
Wow.
But, you know, with my social entrepreneurship and hopefully mm-hmm. getting, you know, folks like yourself to really embrace this concept, you know, my hope is that we switch those statistics that, you know, that 60% make it to the self-authoring and 30% stay, you know, stay at the social and maybe even we'll get a few more up at the top of the curve. But I think that there's so much about, you know, education, because once people understand what the process looks like and have a better grasp of the vocabulary, that context alone allows them to think differently about the choices that they have in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a really exciting place. Like when you work with adults who are, you know, I remember one woman, she was fantastic. She was somebody from the West Coast who participated in my research. And in total, there were 270 men and women who sat down with me and talked about their experiences in transition. And this one woman had been, she was a single person. She had been at an organization for 17 years. And one day, she walked in and she got canned, right? She lost her job. And, you know, she said, I was so embarrassed. And it was really devastating for her because she said, you know, she had a longtime partner and was responsible financially for her mother, but she didn't have children. She said, you know, my job and what I've achieved is a really big part of who I am. And and she's like, you know, and all of a sudden that was taken away. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you know, I really struggled. And wind that story forward nearly a year. And she said, you know, what I'm thinking now is that what I want for myself is enough. Instead of valuing what other people think I should or mm-hmm. could do, what mm-hmm. I want for myself is enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I hear stories like hers, right, I can hear elements of, you know, maybe she is at this moment where she's moving away from, you know, those societal norms that mm-hmm. were kind of baked into her brain by her own personal ecosystem,
mm-hmm.
and that she's moving to this place where, in a self-authored way, she's okay with, you know what, it's okay if I want to do X, Y, or Z, because it holds value to me. And, you know, none of this is saying, you know, let's be reckless, you know, let's exit stage left and, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Mm-hmm.
None of this is about that. It mm-hmm. really is about understanding, you know, those things that, you know, can help us respond, and using those as a kind of a barometer to direct us in a way to make some moves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it can be, I use an example, a professional example, but transition can occur in any element of our lives, right? It can, and, you know, some people, you know, participate in groups that I lead, and they're people who are very compartmentalized, and, you know, they have their work self, and they have their kind of home self, or their relationship self, and they have kind of a religious affiliation, and their kind of wellness, you know, their health or well-being, and it's all
mm-hmm.
very compartmentalized. And the reality is, transition may start in any one of those things. It's
mm-hmm.
very rare that it's all of it, right? And yet, once somebody decides to make some moves in you know, one of those components, if they're a person who is really thinking themselves that way, it very often is the beginning of, you know, even broader exploration. I put myself in that camp, Lauren. You know,
mm-hmm.
my trigger was a, you know, a work-related event. But I think as I've learned about transition, you know, I've radically changed the way I think about my work, and I've changed the work that I do. But it also has led me to really reevaluate a lot of relationships, and, you know, I'm now
mm-hmm.
kind of thinking that I'm at self-authored, maybe even inching towards the transformative, and I want to go more. It's like, oh,
mm-hmm.
what else is here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, so it's a very evolutionary process, and I think you even used that word earlier in our conversation, that it isn't, you know, flick the switch, hooray, I've transitioned.
Mm-hmm.
It really is establishing a basis of understanding of what could be occurring, and then using some tools to help, you know, people move forward at a pace and a scope that makes sense for them.
And, you know, it's what I find so interesting, and I absolutely agree with the education part of it, because like you said, we have an understanding of child development. We have an understanding of a variety of different things that we feel and experience, anxiety and depression, how much more we know about that, how much more we know about attention deficit and focus, how much we know about pregnancy and childbirth and the development process that goes along with that. But the transition process, which is another natural part of everything, of everyone and what we experience, that part is not as well known and documented as a process.
It's so true. Somehow we have this kind of change-phobic kind of mentality when we're in adulthood. And because we have this confusion about vocabulary, is it change, is it transition, we interchange those words,
mm-hmm.
you know, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, from a societal convention, that's fine. We don't say, hey, you're misusing that word. We accept it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think all of that has kind of rendered this topic kind of as hiding in plain sight. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, to your point, I think it is really meaningful to people to become educated on it, because then the conversation can be radically different about, you know, okay, where am I and what do I need to do to continue forward?
Mm-hmm. You know, and you mentioned about sort of it's unspoken or hidden. And I wonder, and I know you speak about it in your book, sort of the societal factors, but when you were just speaking, I kept thinking in my mind, well, yeah, because it's like the idea is nose to the grindstone, work hard, which even in an imaginary point of view, thinking of that, it is head down. It's not looking up. It's not looking around. It's driving forward. So, yeah, to stop and look around and take stock for that transition is outside of the societal norm.
You know, I can tell you when I, you know, started on this path, I was in a complete emotional soup. And part of it was guilt, because I, you know, after I came back from London, when the world kind of went upside down, it took me a while to extricate myself out of my job, but I ultimately started consulting less hours a week, trying to reserve some time to figure out what it was that was going on for me. And I was so guilty for not working, you know, the million hours a week that I had, like, baked into my brain meant success, right? And so it's a very emotional process. But I will tell you, it isn't, you know, so many people I interviewed and that I even work with today, there's all sorts of issues that can deposit us. And you know, again, mine was very, it started very work-related, but I remember this one woman, her name was Katerina, and she came in one time to one of the focus groups, and she said, you know, I'm here to talk about an empty nest. But she said, you know, I could have come in 10 years ago, because she said, I nearly left my husband. She said, he and I met in law school, and we had three kids, and she said, you know, I decided to stay home, and I was fully in that decision. I decided I have no remorse over that decision. She said, but he had this job where he was pretty much gone 100% of the time. And she said, you know, I never bargained to do it alone. And so she said, you know, I almost left him. And she said, you know, when I was struggling with that decision, she said, the options were very clear to me, right? I could do A, B, C, D, and I knew exactly what I needed to choose from among the choice, like which choice was open to me. And she said, now wind the clock forward another 10 years. Our youngest just went to college. She said, you know, empty nest. By the way, I never divorced my husband. She said, now the thing that is so overwhelming to me is that I can't see the choices, right? It's so open-ended, I'm frozen, I don't know what to do. And so I raise that illustration for two reasons. One is it illustrates kind of the two ways people come at transition, right? Very often, people come at it in a bounded way, saying, okay, you know, I have an empty nest now, and I could do A, B, C, or D. And some people have sight lines to say, oh, that's what I want to do. It's between A, B, C, or D. And other people come in and say, I've never felt this way. I have no idea how to move, right? And I think that the fascinating thing about transition is that both are valid experiences, and educating both people on what transition means changes the options that they see. So the person who came in with the four defined options, I know what I want to do, even giving that person education about what transition is alters their view of what those four choices are. And giving the person who has no idea, geez, I have no idea what to do, I'm kind of stalled, a knowledge of transition helps that person frame out what it is they might begin to explore to see what could resonate with them.
You know, and so, it's, go ahead, sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, before this conversation that we're having, I had mentioned to you that it never ceases to amaze me how a subject comes up and all of a sudden I'm having conversations about it. And the scenario that you just mentioned is one that I've heard from at least three or four people in the last week about that, what do I do now? That floating in no man's land experience.
Yes.
And to for those, in particular, those people to be able to say, oh, it sounds like you're in transition. Here's a book that can help. Right away, the shoulders decompress. There's a sigh. You know, it's just, oh. It's just, fascinating.
Well, it's great to know that there's a resource, because when I needed the resource so many years ago, there was nothing. And so that puts a smile on my face. But the other thing I'll say is, because it's a good time to talk about, so what does the process look like, right? So in response to, you know, someone says, oh, you know, maybe I am in transition. Well, what is this going to entail? And and I found that there are really two large buckets of activities that need to happen to help somebody navigate transition successfully. The first bucket has to do with envisioning, right? Envisioning, you know, that woman that came in and said, I have no idea. What am I? I've always dreamed that I needed time. Now I have time. I have no idea. Envisioning really is trying to use some structured techniques to help think about, you know, what are those values and beliefs that are truly ours, and what would that mean in terms of scoping out those things that might hold meaning to us as we think about our lives, right? There's lots of techniques, and there's four or five in the book. You know, it's all about really having people dignify maybe some things that really are in their hearts that maybe they're too afraid to say, or would they never share with someone, or tried and it didn't work out, and whatever mm-hmm. it is, everyone has a different take on it. Mm-hmm. But that envisioning is a very important time, and a lot of times our society diminishes the value of that step, right? We want to do, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And this step is really saying, no, we want you to stop for a minute and think before you do,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that's very countercultural, and yet it's critical. Right? It's critical. I always get concerned when somebody kind of bounces into my office and says, I know exactly what I want to do. Can you just help me do the process? I'm like, oh, okay. let's stop a minute and figure out that exact thing.
Right.
Let's say it out loud a few more times. So envisioning is the first step.
Mm-hmm.
And that second bucket of things that need to happen are really a series of things that I call validation. Right? Because again, society has us believe that it's, you know, one swing of the bat and we've hit it out of the park. And in reality, the way transitioning, and by the way, most of life occurs, is that it's little steps followed by a next step that's slightly bigger, and the next step is slightly bigger there again, you know, so it's little steps. And so validation is really creating these experiments that can help us test and refine what we envisioned. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, when I did envisioning for me, you know, I was like, wow, you know, I'm very interested in women's development, but I was also really interested in shaping agendas and helping structure conversations. And, you know, when I was envisioning, I'm like, what does that mean? You know, and so one of my tests was I started a blog, you know, and it let me start to talk to people in a way that was comfortable both for them as a recipient of the information and me as the person who was trying to put the information out.
Mm-hmm.
And it helped me learn an awful lot about how to talk about this thing called transition, which
mm-hmm.
is amorphous, and everyone thinks they know what it is but doesn't really, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I use that just as an illustration to say validation, which is the second set of activities, really it requires us to test and refine in starting in small ways, but in bigger and bigger ways as we go forward, until we get to that place where we would say, you know what, this is the most incredible outcome I could have ever dreamed. And I have to tell you, one of the people who participated in my research, she was a woman from the Charlotte area,
mm-hmm.
and she said she was a very, very successful woman. You know, she was in her early 50s. You know, if you and I met her, it would be like, wow, you've done so many terrific things. And she was like, you know, I lost my job recently after 26 years with the organization. And she said, you know, it really hit me hard. And when she had been a younger person, she had a child who died. It was during the 26-year tenure when she worked for this organization. And she said, you know, the leaving the job and losing the job, it reopened a lot of the grieving process that she had done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was another disconnection from her child.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, after about 18 months, you know, I said, okay, now help me understand what transition has done for you. And she looked me in the eye and she said, you know, I feel as if I'm breathing for the first time.
Wow.
Right? So that it was this incredibly, even this woman who had been successful, she had survived so much, she was a lovely person. And yet even the process there brought her to a place that was so much different.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, you know, I didn't ask for this. It was an unexpected trigger. But the process was really enlivening and optimistic and positive and, frankly, invaluable, because now she was looking at the world in a very different way. So I think transition can be overwhelming. It sounds hard. The outcome is uncertain. But what my work tries to do is really to take the risk out of it by breaking it down.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, educating people, right? Take away some of the fear by just giving information so people understand it. And the second is using some tools and techniques so that people can go through envision or go through validate in a way that's, you know, comfortable in terms of the level of risk and time that they can put in, and yet still helping them move forward.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's one of the things that I, in looking, in reading your book,
to see that part of it, because there's certainly the normalization of the process, but to really give those tools, and looking at the tools that you provide, the brainstorming options and the envision and validate, in looking it over, there's so many parallels in what you explain to what I do as a hypnotherapist and coach. Even seeing that you have the meditative technique, love that. But for people,
it's invaluable.
I totally agree. And for people who are going through the transition process, they might not identify that a coach or a hypnotherapist is somebody that can help them through this. That to have your book as a resource that has the tools is so helpful, because the words are right there and the identification is immediate once the title is there and you read the first few pages of the book. That to have those tools there for people is invaluable. I think it's great.
Yeah, and very often people don't go this alone, right? Very often people are working with coaches or counselors, or they're putting their own kind of peer group together help support them, because it's a process that really asks us some very hard questions. And I always hear from people that when they work with someone else, they're challenged to broaden themselves even beyond what they themselves were thinking, right? Mm-hmm. So that counterpart helps even, you know, pressure test in an enlightening way, in a bigger way than maybe our own instincts would allow us to do.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a question that was popping up in my mind as I was reading your book, and I wanted to get your take on it, because there obviously are the variety of catalysts for the transitions, the triggers. And they almost seem to me to be like an intuitive nudge, if you will, that this is the time for that readjusting and that alignment. And this is kind of where I go in my mind, and it's not a be-all, end-all, but I just wonder where you register on it, that it seems like with all of the transitions that we're making over time, that it's the realignment with ourselves, or who we knew ourselves to be, let's say, before society, before the ego, before beliefs were formed, just sort of that initial person, and that as we go through time, these transitions keep us in alignment and get us back into alignment with who we knew that to be. Is that too out there?
No, I think it's. I'm shaking my head as you're talking. And I think that a lot of people in my research referenced ignoring their instincts, right? You know, I knew this wasn't right. You know, in fact, the woman that I mentioned who had lost her job, you know, she mentioned, you know, I knew 2 years before that I should have left, and I ignored that instinct, right? You know, it was this inertia that she was in, and she's like, I just ignored it. And I remember there were signs, even in my own world. I remember prior to my, you know, big trigger when I was on the business trip in London, I remember sitting in my boss's staff meeting, and this is like a fancy affair, right? I was on the executive team of a Fortune 500 company, right? This is a big deal. I had worked for 20 years to get in that room, right? You know, I have, you know, my whole life was like, oh, maybe someday I'll be CEO, you know, who knows? And I remember sitting there saying to myself, this is it? You got to be kidding me. I've worked this hard for this, right? You know, and that instinct, like saying, this isn't right. You need to leave. This is not right for you, right? That instinct was there, and yet I ignored it. So I kind of now that I have some more distance on my transition and I've done all this research, I think that some of these catalysts are intuitive nudges, right? That it's the universe saying, hey, Linda, pay attention here. You're on a different path. We need you to regroup. And, you know, I truly believe that some of it is that. And, you know, I remember one weekend I had the great pleasure. I was asked to join a group of women who had lost spouses. And they were a group that really pushed me. They said, you know, wait a minute. You know, what do you mean that, you know, triggers are just triggers, and that they don't require us to transition, that transition is ultimately a choice? Because they said, hey, my spouse died, right? And And I think that in that extreme mm-hmm. example, it helps really underscore what's happening in transition, right? The trigger, the loss, is nothing more than a catalyst, right? Mm-hmm. What we do with that moment is our choice.
Right.
And we are given those triggers in little and big ways all the time.
mm-hmm.
And you know, ultimately the choice is, you know, is it time to reevaluate kind of what holds value and meaning to us? Because if it is, that's not as scary as we might believe. In fact, you know, transitioning is about growth, and it's positive and enlivening. And for goodness sakes, who wouldn't take that choice? You know, mm-hmm. it's really quite an exciting and beneficial, I guess is the best word I can come to. You know, those who have gone through transition and have been kind enough to share their experiences with me, I've never met one who hasn't had a positive outcome.
Yeah, interesting.
Some of them are defined an outcome in relationships, right? You know, all of a sudden, you know, I've had a negative relationship with all my siblings for my whole life, and I'm okay now. I'm okay in that environment now, right? So it mm-hmm. may be a very personal one. It may be a job thing. It may be, you know, the outcomes are as broad as the horizon,
mm-hmm.
right? But it is allowing people to understand what's happening, giving them the tools to succeed in it, and to define their own outcome. And that, you know, that's my social mission. It's I've never done more exciting and important work.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. You know, and it's, as you're describing it, the phrase that just kept coming to my mind was the okayness of being your authentic self. It's so okay. You're okay is different from somebody else's. It's just all okay.
It's okay, right. And I think, you know, I always kind of, the hairs on the back of my neck kind of go up a little bit when I hear like vulnerability or authentic, right? I think we overuse some of those words, and some people come into my office, you know, almost as if it's another to-do on the list. Oh, I have to be authentic today.
Right.
And I want to be cautious, right? You know, I think ultimately that vocabulary can help some people, but it can be a burdensome to other people,
sure.
You know. I try my best to really make sure people hear that transition is really about anchoring on what holds value and meaning to you, and bringing it out in a way that is, you know, in aligned or connected to
mm-hmm.
those things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and for some people, that is kindness, and they're just going to be that kindness fits that mold of their values and how they're going to bring that gift to the world. And other people, it's a million miles away from that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Fascinating. I love the topic. I loved the book. I know I'll refer to it many times over the coming years. I'm curious to know, in reading the book, I do a lot of traveling. I'm curious to know if you've considered doing an audio version of the book. I know it's hard to see the figures in an audio book, but the content is valuable enough to hear as we're moving and grooving in our lives.
So, yeah, there's lots of things to say in response to that. First of all, there is an audio book available on Amazon. So,
oh, there is? I didn't see that.
Yes, and so if you're an Audible member, you get it for free. It's one credit. But there is an audio version of the book, and I do read it, right? So that was a great pleasure for me. But the good news is because I knew the material so well, I could easily create
mm-hmm.
the visuals for people who can't see the book, right?
Oh,
so I think we do an okay job kind of introducing people to the frameworks, even though it's an audio book. So, it's available. But there's also a lot of other ways to get close to the work, right? The book has a website, and on the website there are some short videos. And on YouTube, there are also videos that are, you know, various speaking engagements that I've done, but also walk people through some of these figures and frameworks.
Okay.
And I also have a Twitter account, which I try to do a lot on multiple times a day, and it's @WMN_transition, so @women's transition. So at WMN_transition. And I'm working on a workbook and a second book, and I hope to do audio vignettes of the workbook. So maybe, Lauren, that's something you can help me with.
Fantastic. I'd love to. I would love to. And you mentioned the website for the book. I imagine that it's Women and Transition as the website. So to know the title of the book, you'd be able to find the website, correct?
Yes, and the tricky thing is it's women plural, so it's WOMEN.
Great.
And transition.com.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. And is that the best way for people to find you, find the book, videos, YouTube, Twitter, and the book website?
Yes, and you know, and I'm open to saying hello to anyone. So you know, people find me all sorts of ways, and I'm delighted to talk with anyone. I really appreciate your willingness to have this conversation. And, you know, I applaud people who are willing to explore this. I can't think of a person for whom transition hasn't been a beneficial process.
That's fantastic. I would agree. And I'm looking forward to having additional resources to direct people to when I hear of the transition. So just by more people knowing about it, as I like to say, it elevates the conversation.
I agree.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being with me today, Linda. I really appreciate it. Great speaking with you, and I look forward to future conversations.
I agree. Thank you so much, Lauren.
Absolutely.